the Chicago Theater of the Air. Produced and narrated by Marion Clare, conducted by Henry Weber, written and directed by Jack Lafondre, Mutual presents radio's greatest hour of music and drama, the famous Chicago Theater of the Air. Tonight's performance, The Chocolate Soldier by Oscar Strauss, starring Virginia Haskins and David Polari, supported by Helene Heckman, Ruth Slater, Arwin Schwag, and Earl Wilkie, with an all-Chicago dramatic cast headed by Muriel Bremner and Everett Clark, and the chorus under the direction of Robert Trendler. Featured speaker of the evening is Colonel Robert R. McCormick, distinguished editor and publisher of the Chicago Tribune. The Chicago Theater of the Air presents The Chocolate Soldier. Thank you.
It was ever thus. Whenever war comes to a nation, lonely maidens sit at home in moon-drenched boudoirs and dream of heroes far afield. It is true today, and it was true long, long ago when the mythical empires of Bulgaria and Serbia were at combat. In such a setting, we look in on the silken boudoir of the lovely Nadina Popoff, fair maiden of Bulgaria and willing slave of romance. On Nadina's dresser is a warrior's picture, a reasonable facsimile of one Bulgarian soldier known as Alexius.
Alexius, my Alexius, I'm so proud of you. I received your letter telling me how you won the Battle of Slavinsky single-handedly. Oh, I can see you now charging the enemy batteries. My Alexius at the head of his noble troops. Oh, is someone here? Oh, I was dreaming, I guess. You see, Alexius, your picture is so close to me that I thought for a moment you were here. You and I alone.
Nadina?
Oh.
Nadina, child?
Oh, hello, Mother. Hello, Cousin Marcia.
Cousin Nadina, it's awfully late.
Nadina, child, you should be in bed.
But I can't sleep, Mother. Hundreds of soldiers in the streets below, but... Oh, I miss Alexius so.
I know. I miss your father, too. If only Colonel Popoff were home from the war.
I wish I had someone to miss. It's terribly boring not to worry about anything.
Men, men everywhere. But not a single one to...
Nadina?
To...
What are you saying, child?
Look at Nadina. Goose pimples.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mother. But look through the window. Aren't they wonderful?
Into the night, marching men, marching men. See the moon, the stars are shining.
Just like soldiers, isn't it? Fighting for duty and sighing for beauty.
Fighting for duty, sighing for beauty, is soldierland. This I not only, we two are lonely, lonely and sad. Oh, how we miss them, long to fear them.
Those soldiers were only as anxious to search for love as they are to find the foe. The war wouldn't last long.
Men are all so thoughtless, Nadina. Just like Casimir Popoff, your father. But it's so difficult to get along without them.
Life is lonely, sad and lonely, if your father's got a man. Life is lonely, then deny it, if you can.
Lonely women watch our keeping. What a flying eyes are weeping.
Just a year we have been waiting. Much too long, I don't mind stating.
For a kiss, I'm nearly dying. Oh, this waiting is most trying.
I would like some mischief brewing, but there's really nothing doing.
If we live too long alone, we shall be but a thin and bone.
This is an our sorry plight.
Nadina, child, Marcia and I must retire to our rooms now, and you must get some sleep. We'll all feel better in the morning.
I hope so, Mother. I hope so. I can't help feeling that someone's awfully close to me. It's the moonlight, I guess. Oh, if Alexius were only here.
Such a touching scene.
Oh, there is someone in my room, behind that curtain.
Alas, dear lady, any port in a storm?
Oh, that uniform.
I see you recognize my military attire. Don't you think I look well in this uniform?
Servian.
Servian. The water spout to your balcony was the nearest thing I could find in the way of escape from your Bulgarians.
Well, you'll find that water spout led right to your doom. Do you know what I'm going to do with you?
Conceal me.
Conceal you? You, a Servian enemy of my country?
Well, I'm not exactly a Servian. I'm a Swiss, hired to fight in the Servian army. Anything to keep my figure trim, you understand? Lieutenant Boomerly, at your service.
Not at my service. You fought against my country and you do have a handsome figure.
Maidens just can't resist me.
Get up! How dare you sit down alongside of me?
Can't possibly get up. Haven't the strength. Too hungry. Have you a chocolate drop on the premises?
Chocolate drop? Would you, a soldier, eat chocolate drops?
Oh, I thrive on them. Always carry chocolates in my cartridge box.
Indeed, and where do you carry your cartridges?
Never carry any. I hate guns.
Oh, contemptible.
Isn't it? Oh, are these caramels I see in this dish?
I suppose you eat those, too, huh?
Next to chocolate drops, I adore chocolate caramels. My dear lady, you are an angel. I'd rather eat chocolate than fight Bulgarians any day in the week.
Imagine a soldier who lives on chocolate.
Do I amuse you?
Oh, you little chocolate soldier man, you are far too sweet and pretty. Oh, you funny chocolate soldier man, for you I feel a great pity. Oh, you silly chocolate soldier man, stop me to ring the bells, to ring the bells, if you ever felt a hold on me.
A warrior by trade, and not a soldier heaven made.
I studied shooting, studied riding, I studied fencing, made deciding. I am a warrior by chance, and not a hero of romance.
Oh, you live.
I am a chocolate soldier man. She thinks me sweet and pretty.
Oh, you fine.
I am a chocolate soldier man. For me, she seems great pity.
Oh, you silly chocolate soldier man. Just me to me, just me.
Your full-grown maiden's kiss.
This is foolishness. You're so amusing that I can't really want to see you shot, but if you don't leave at once...
How can I leave? I'd surely be killed if I attempted to reach the street. Think of my Adonis-like figure reposing in a Bulgarian grave.
Well, I don't know what to say. It's a terrible position for me to be in. I'm going to be married.
Oh, to that jackass in the picture?
Jackass? That settles it.
Horrors. I've been disarmed by a slip of a girl. I must consult my army manual about this.
I'll shoot you with your own revolver, that's what I'll do. Your own revolver. I'll count to three. And if you don't leave,
What a pity to die just as I was falling in love, too.
One. Two. In love?
Uh-huh. Three. Well, why don't you shoot?
I can't. I just can't.
Of course you can. I never keep my revolver loaded.
Oh, you wretch. Haven't you one decent feeling?
Uh-huh. My feeling for you. A strange, sweet feeling that I never felt before.
A sweet feeling?
Sweeter than any chocolate I've ever eaten. Haven't you a little sympathy for me, my candy princess? Just a little.
I don't know.
Life is sweet, I hold it dear. All death is gruesome, dark and drear. I love beyond all measure. My life therefore I treasure. I love to live and live to love. So do not care to go above. For death would have no fears for me. If I possessed your sympathy, it is a burden sweet to carry, the burden of a maiden's heart.
Remember, I'm engaged to marry.
Someone with you?
Oh, Mother.
I thought I heard voices in here. Good heavens, a Serbian officer.
Oh, I pray you, do not let me frighten you, my dear young maiden. I am harmless, I assure you.
Maiden? Me? A young maiden? Oh, you've made a mistake, sir.
Oh, mistake?
You mean, madame, I am a married woman.
Married? You? Upon my word, a child bride.
Young man, how did you get into this boudoir?
Your sister will explain.
Sister? She's my daughter, Nadina.
No, I never would have believed it. Such a lovely, youthful creature to be a mother.
Oh, you poor dear. You look tired and hungry.
Mother, act your age.
Such a sympathetic young woman. I knew it the moment I saw you, madame.
Nadina, ask Marcia to bring this poor dear something to eat.
Yes, Mother, yes, of course.
And drink.
Drink, of course. Champagne, Nadina.
All right, Mother, champagne.
Oh, and something to wear.
Wear?
Obviously, I cannot be seen running around in this Serbian uniform.
Of course not. Tell Marcia to bring your father's house coat, Nadina.
Well, all right. Cousin Marcia. Marcia.
Yes, Nadine. Is that a man? A real live man?
Here, Cousin Marcia. Restrain yourself. I'm alive, but awfully tired.
Cousin Marcia, will you please bring Father's house coat for this gentleman and some champagne and some... Asleep. He has the audacity to sleep on my bed.
Shh. Quiet, Nadina. Don't awaken the poor dear.
Oh, just look at him, Nadina. Such a cunning countenance.
Yes, he is cute, isn't he? Mother, aren't you and Marcia tired? I'll gladly stay here and care for him.
Oh, let me stay.
Remember, I am the oldest, with the most experience.
In peaceful, restful slumber, forgetting all his woe and pain, you too must rest. You both are weary. Go sleep, and I will here remain. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Tee-ra-la-la, tee-ra-la-la. Tell no one, oh Memphis Bishop.
Our Chicago Theater of the Air production of The Chocolate Soldier by Oscar Strauss will continue following a featured radio commentary by Colonel Robert R. McCormick, distinguished editor and publisher of the Chicago Tribune, noted world historian, and outspoken American patriot. This evening, Colonel McCormick will speak on the bulwark of the Union. Ladies and gentlemen, Colonel Robert R. McCormick.
Speaking some weeks ago on the result of the War of 1812, we noted the powerful impetus given by victory to the American settlement of the Northwest Territory. That impetus arose in part out of the exaltation of the triumph itself, but principally it was the people's response to the decisive confirmation of their national sovereignty over the richest land ever to come into American possession. The enormous geographical importance of the American triumph becomes instantly apparent when we consider the claims advanced by British and Canadian imperialists. In the East, These demands included the outright annexation of portions of Maine, northern New York, and the south bank of the St. Lawrence River. In the West, British and Canadian authorities proposed to establish and exploit a confederation of Indian nations occupying the immensely fertile region north of a line drawn between Sandusky, Ohio, and Kaskaskia, Illinois. They insisted on control of the Great Lakes and navigational rights on the Mississippi, then thought to originate in Lake Superior. Had these demands been enforced upon the defeated American Republic, Montreal and not New York would have become the major commercial port and city on the eastern seaboard. There would have been no need to develop the Erie Canal. The West would long have remained an Indian native state with, of course, the inevitable British resident. As it was, the Erie Canal, begun in 1817 and completed in 1825, gave the expanding population of New York and New England easy water access to the most fertile regions of the old Northwest. It was an access long delayed. The first migrants from Virginia, Tennessee, and Kentucky had already made entry to the Western Territory by way of the Ohio River and overland by means of the national highway through the celebrated Cumberland Gap, lying near the borders of all three southern states. The southern migration was further and greatly aided by the rapid development of steamboat transportation on western waters. By the late 1830s, lands adjacent to the Ohio and lower Mississippi were served by a steamboat fleet larger in tonnage than Great Britain's entire merchant marine. During the 1850s, New Orleans and St. Louis ranked next to New York as the nation's busiest ports. Even so, the Great Lakes region and the more inland areas of the Northwest Territory remained sparsely settled. Steamboating on the Great Lakes began with the launching of the famous Walk in the Water in 1818. This vessel, wrecked in 1821 and its successor, the Superior, did violent pioneer service. Yet not until 1826 did the Superior have a rival on the larger lakes. And it was not until 1837, 12 years after the completion of the Erie Canal, that Chicago enjoyed regular steamboat service. As we have seen, by 1837, hundreds of steamboats were already plying western rivers. The lag in American settlement of the Great Lakes region and the more inland portions of the Northwest Territory is reflected in the development of certain major commercial towns. Detroit, the oldest inland settlement in America, remained a village when Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Louisville, and St. Louis were thriving cities. For years after the steamboats coming, Toledo, Chicago, and Milwaukee existed as mere trading posts. After the completion of the Erie Canal, however, the tide of northern migration flooded into northern Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois. The same expansion of northern people swept on into Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa. The date of formal admission to the Union had little bearing on the true impact of this northern migration. Indiana was admitted to statehood in 1816 and Illinois 2 years later. But in those years, the permanent population of the new states were settlements clinging to the river borders of their southern counties. Not until 1817 was it possible to travel overland from Detroit to the settled east without traversing Indian country. As late as 1820, all of Michigan Territory, including what is now Wisconsin, numbered fewer than 9,000 white inhabitants. Wisconsin had over 12,000 white settlers in 1836. The development of the Illinois country typifies the development of the entire region. In 1820, Louis Cass, the governor of Michigan Territory, fearlessly entered an Indian encampment on the Sault Ste. Marie, drove all the chiefs and pulled down the last British flag to be displayed south of the Sioux. The year following, Governor Cass made a tour of inspection in Illinois. Traveling up the Illinois River from Peoria to Chicago, a distance of some 140 miles, Governor Cass did not encounter a single white habitation. 10 years later, except for lead mining settlements in and around Galena, northern Illinois was virtually uninhabited. Chicago in 1830 had no harbor, nor was the settlement mentioned in the United States Census. Harbor improvement and Chicago's growth began in 1833. The settlement of the rich farmland of central and northern Illinois took place by water, road, and rail transport in the 40s and 50s. Some of my own ancestors reached Illinois by a boat from Richmond, Virginia to New York and Albany, by canal from Albany to Buffalo, by boat from Buffalo to Toledo, by rail from Toledo to New Buffalo, Michigan, and thence by wagon to Chicago. The St. Clair Delta at Detroit remained an obstacle to through traffic on the lakes. Lighters were used to relieve larger craft of their freight. The shallows offering water passages from 2 to 6 feet in depth were not adequately dredged until the 70s. Once the migration was begun, the Old North moved into the New Northwest in an overwhelming tide. The newcomers to Illinois were New Yorkers and New Englanders, plus an important contingent of settlers from the older portions of Ohio, themselves New Yorkers, Pennsylvanians, or New Englanders, once or twice removed. Their coming was a sober invasion, and for that reason it had been little marked in history. They brought with them the habits of thrift and industry. They were believers in public improvements and popular education. True to a Puritan heritage, they distrusted a good many of the graces and amenities of life. But they loved liberty, and they utterly rejected slavery. The objection to slavery in Illinois was not so much akin to New England's abolitionist sentiment as it was an economic objection. The free peoples of Illinois in the Middle West numbered abolitionists among them. But in general, the Midwestern stand against the South's peculiar institutions arose out of a widely held conviction that slavery subjected free men and free society to a dangerous and degrading competition. In the new state constitution adopted in 1848, slavery in Illinois was expressly prohibited by the 16th section of the Declaration of Rights. There should be neither slavery nor involuntary servitude in this state, except as punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted. The influx of northern settlers into the Northwest irrevocably stamped a northern character on the region at the very time that the building of the railroads and the expansion of manufacturing attracted large number of European immigrants into the growing towns and citizens. These immigrants, beginning lives in America at the lowest economic level, aspired to freedom and equality as the very essence of their newfound citizenship. They too saw in any extension of slavery an ominous threat to their free status. But in these and other matters, the influence of the immigrant upon the molding of Midwestern character was contributive rather than formative. The immigrant of the pre-Civil War period wanted to become an American. He modeled his ideas on American conduct and behavior upon the examples nearest at hand. The reinforcements contributed by immigrants and the sons of immigrants were a powerful addition to the Union war potential. Of the three ablest northern generals, one was of immigrant stock. The South had few such reserves. The creation of the Republican Party and the election of Abraham Lincoln served unmistakable political notice as to the temper and the patriotism of the Middle West. Once battle had been joined over the issue of secession, Western troops under Grant beat down Confederate opposition from Fort Donelson through Vicksburg to Chattanooga. Under Sherman, they brought the war home to Georgia and the Carolinas. At the last, the Western generals, Grant and Sheridan, broke the deadlock in the Virginia theater. Military genius aside, the sheer weight and quality of Middle Western manpower were utterly decisive. The Northwest contribution of men to the colors makes impressive reading, even in our day of far larger population. Ohio called up 313,000 of her sons. Illinois sent 260,000. Indiana gave just less than 200,000 men. Wisconsin, 90,000 men. Michigan, Iowa, and Minnesota enlisted 187,000 soldiers from regions of newly broken prairie farms and forest clearings. 1 million Middle Westerners served for the preservation of the Republic, and these men were the best troops in the Union Army. When we reflect the Middle West settlement and expansion took place largely within a single generation, say between 1830 and 1860, we may well acclaim its men and women the greatest American generation since the age of the Revolution.
Colonel Robert R. McCormick, editor and publisher of the Chicago Tribune, has been heard in another of his informative radio commentaries delivered as a public service feature from the stage of the Chicago Theater of the Air. Free copies of tonight's address on the Bulwark of the Union may be obtained by writing to the Mutual Broadcasting System, Chicago 11, Illinois. The Chicago Theater of the Air continues tonight's production of The Chocolate Soldier by Oscar Strauss, starring Virginia Haskins and David Polari, supported by Ruth Slater, Arwin Schwag, Helene Heckman, and Earl Wilkie. Conducted by Henry Weber, narrated by Marion Clare.
Serbia are at war. Lieutenant Bumeli of the Serbian army is hiding in the boudoir of the lovely Nadina, daughter of the Bulgarian Colonel Popov, hiding and sleeping peacefully in Colonel Popov's housecoat. But wait, Lieutenant Bumeli's slumbers are about to be rudely interrupted.
The lovely Nadina. Some more chocolates, please.
Wake up. You must wake up. There are Bulgarian soldiers looking everywhere for you.
Well, ask my guardian angel. I cannot leave you.
Oh, but you must leave me. Hurry or you'll surely be caught.
Yes, barbarians. Yes, barbarians. When they fight, are all Bulgarians.
Proved in many, many battles that a courage nothing rivals.
Yes, forever, ever, ever, we will win with all endeavor.
And you'll never, never, never cease to think that we are clever. No, we'll never, never, never cease to think that we are clever.
No, we'll never, never, never
cease to think that we are clever.
Very sorry to disturb their beauty. Mazikrov does his duty. If we find him here, he'll die. All master for the spy.
Oh, ho! So, Lieutenant Bumeli, disguised in a house coat, right into our arms, huh?
I prefer the arms of this young maiden, if you don't mind, Corporal.
Yes, I see what you mean. What a pity that I must place you under arrest as a spy.
Wait, what's that celebration in the street?
Oh, it appears that you're just too late, Corporal. The war seems to be over.
It is. The war must be over.
Come with me, Bumeli. The fate of a Serbian prisoner is up to my commanding officer.
I suppose so. Have you a chocolate drop with you, old man?
Thank the Lord, the war is over. Now these heroes are in clover. All the blind retreat is done. With the clear command and fun. So away with melancholy. Let us kiss and all be jolly. We will sing the national play. Both night and day. We'll sing and play with gear away. Sing, dance, and play. Die!
greetings, my dears. Greetings, one and all, big and small. Your bold warrior returns from the war.
Oh, Casimir Popoff, it's so good to have my brave husband home again.
Good to be here, my dear. Good to be here.
You look so cute and grotesque in your uniform, Colonel Popoff.
Oh, thank you, Masha. Oh, and here's Nadina, my favorite daughter.
Father, now that the war's over, what happens to Serbian prisoners?
Oh, they're all turned loose, of course. Set one free myself, just a little while ago. Amusing fellow. Swiss he was.
Swiss?
Swiss?
Aye. Told me a comical story about outwitting some utterly ridiculous Bulgarian women.
Outwitting?
Utterly ridiculous?
Bulgarian women.
Aye. They must have been exceedingly stupid females indeed. By the way, will one of you fetch my house coat?
House coat.
Ah, yes. A man's home is his castle, and what greater luxury than a house coat and his slippers?
Father, wouldn't you rather wear your turtleneck sweater? It's rather chilly in the house.
No, my child. I wouldn't think of disturbing the turtle. I'll take my house coat, thank you.
He wants his house coat.
Yes, his house coat.
His house coat.
Oh, I tell you, there's no greater pleasure than when you are completely at your ease. When all things you take at your leisure and do just whatever you please.
Oh, I tell you, there's no greater pleasure than when you are completely at your ease.
When all things you take at your leisure and do just whatever you please.
Oh, Father, we can't seem to find your house coat.
What? No house coat?
No house coat.
No houseboat. A house coat.
But I...
You've been away so long, your things are rather misplaced. We'll find it later, Casimir.
Father, tell us about the Swiss you set free.
The Swiss? Oh, there was a comical one. Hid in the boudoir of some Bulgarian female.
Did you say anything about the female?
Oh, just that the daughter didn't know much about men and fell madly in love with him.
Oh.
Said the older one, the mother, was flabby and ugly. Fought with the daughter and a silly cousin over who was to take care of him.
Oh.
The flabby one disguised him in her husband's house coat. He said the old fool would never know the difference. He said... Wait a minute. House coat. Old fool. Bulgarian women. Can it be that...
Good evening.
The Swiss.
The Swiss. What occasions this visit to my home, sir?
I came to return this house coat. Good heavens. The colonel has set me free. Something tells me I've made a terrible mistake.
Egad, that's my house coat you're carrying, sir.
Oh, my.
Gad, zooks. You are the wenches Boomerly outwitted. My own flesh and blood.
I'm flabby and ugly, am I?
And I'm young and foolish and don't know anything about men.
And I'm silly, am I? I mean, I am?
Please, dear ladies, forgive me. I had no idea Colonel Popoff lived here when I told him of my experience in this house.
Indeed.
Forgive. Why was I there? I wish to live. For me were soldiers running. Their kind attentions I was shunning. I climbed up there to save my skin. That's why I refuge sought within. Oh, what a sorry, sorry plight. Your daughter saved my life that night. She also wished to see
Barbara saved my life at night. She also wished to see me live. Forgive. Wondrous memories thrill me. You were my own. Sorrow surely would kill me to live alone. Dearest Nadina, hear me. Be ever near me. Let your love cheer me. Love you.
Nadina.
Oh, how dare you come in here? Go away.
Nadina, is it true that you're going to marry that birdhead? I mean, Alexius.
After the fool you made of me, I certainly am going to marry that birdhead. I mean, oh, I hate you. Go away.
Then it's all over between us?
Yes, it's all over.
I never loved before, dear. That's why I am so sad.
If you could make that clear, dear, then my heart would be glad.
But you must wed another, and I must sigh alone.
Yes, I must wed another, leave you to grieve and moan.
But if you were my wife, how happy we would be, so very happy be.
Be happy all my life if you were wed to me.
Of that there is no doubt. I know what I'm about. Each morning you should have a kiss, at midday too maybe. And then at night, if you were polite, perhaps I'd give you three. Each morning you should have a kiss, at midday to maybe. And then at night, if you were polite, perhaps I'd give you three.
And that would lovely be.
So very lovely be.
And that would lovely
so lovely be. So very lovely.
I'm sorry, a hero I must wed.
Her lover said, don't worry, be glad that I'm not dead.
The time is drawing nearer, the wedding bells will ring. To me you're growing dearer, the bells will sorrow bring.
Then let him go. Take me, you'll happy be with me. He will leave you, that's true.
Maybe, and so would you.
Betray you, run away.
It happens every day. So listen, I pray. Each morning I can win a man, at midday too, maybe. And then at night, if I feel all right, for every finger three. I can win a man for any time I try. And so farewell, my company, and now goodbye.
Adieu, and now goodbye.
Well, goodbye. If you change your mind about that duck, Dom Alexius, drop me a line.
Oh, get out! I never want to see him again. I'll write him a letter and tell him so. Where's my pen? Where's my ink? Let me see now. I'll say,
my dear sir, Mr. Boomerly, most thankful you are now to me. The reasons why I'll plainly state. The first one is, you came too late. And secondly, you're much too smart to please a simple maiden's heart. And thirdly, you're an awful flirt. Your manners awfully can hurt.
Are you writing that to me, Nadina?
Oh, what are you doing back here, Lieutenant Boomerly?
Good day, good day, good day. I just dropped in to say good day.
But you just said goodbye.
Unpredictable, that's me. Goodbye one minute, good day the next.
Oh, how can anyone be so hasteful?
Aren't you going to give me my letter?
Here, read it for yourself.
My dear sir, Mr. Boomerly, most hateful you are now to me. The reason why I plainly state, the first one is you came too late. And what did you write here? And secondly, you're much too smart to please a simple maiden's heart.
And thirdly, you're an awful flirt. Your manners are too flip and pert.
Don't let me see you anymore.
No, no, not anymore.
With love, Nadina, Papa.
Love? No.
With love, scorn, Nadina, Papa.
Scorn.
Love, love.
Nadina.
Go away.
I have just asked your father for your hand in marriage.
Oh, marriage. Do you think he'd consent to that? We Popoffs are people of position. We have our own horses, a cow, and several chickens, and solid silver, and tablecloths and napkins of pure linen.
Dear angel, how many horses have you?
Four.
I have 400. How many carriages?
Two.
I have 200. And 4,000 pure linen sheets, 9,000 blankets and quilts, 10,000 silver knives and forks and spoons.
Oh.
I have 6 palatial houses with 200 rooms in each, 60 bathrooms.
Oh, no.
600 servants. I speak 3 languages.
You do?
And if you please, I'll ask for your hand in all 3 of them.
Oh, who are you, the emperor of the Swiss?
No, I am the son and heir of the largest hotel owner in Switzerland.
Oh.
Shall I go now?
No. No, don't.
But I'm impudent. You said so in your letter. You said...
Well, if I should consent to marry you, Would you reform?
Hopeless.
Well, I mean, not great reform, but some.
Couldn't possibly reform. I'd be allergic to myself.
Oh, well, there are some things about you that I like just as they are.
Not many.
Well, if my father should say yes,
He did.
He did?
He did. I have Colonel Popoff's signature to a marriage contract right here.
Oh, darling, my own chocolate soldier.
Oh, that reminds me. Is this a new box of candy?
Brand new, filled to the top.
Mmm, what perfect paradise. A beautiful angel with a dowry of chocolate.
And narrated by Marion Clare, conducted by Henry Weber, written and directed by Jack Lafondre, the Chicago Theater of the Air has presented The Chocolate Soldier by Oscar Strauss, starring Virginia Heskins as Nadina and David Poleri as Lieutenant Boomerly, supported by Ruth Slater, Arwin Schweig, Helene Heckman, and Earl Wilkie. Featured speaker was Colonel Robert R. McCormick, editor and publisher of the Chicago Tribune. Robert Trendler was in charge of the chorus. Performance rights were granted by Hans Bartsch. In synchronized speaking roles this evening were Muriel Bremner as Nadina, Everett Clark as Lieutenant Boomerly, Carl Kroenke as Colonel Popoff, Hope Summers as the mother, Elmira Ressler as Masha, and Norman Gottschalk as an officer. This is Lee Bennett cordially inviting you to next week's Chicago Theater of the Air production, Puccini's grand opera classic, Madame Butterfly, starring Nancy Carr and David Poleri. Thank you. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.